This episode is brought to you by Audible.com with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
Disappeared. And what happened to the Moonraker? Good God. Yes, yes, of course, Minister. Right away.
You fat slob. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 175, and this is the podcast that mines the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined tonight by Brian. He's sure he saw nipples in the opening, Dunaway.
Pretty sure I did. Welcome to my castle, James. As you can see, I am insanely rich, and I like to play the piano for hot lady models in the morning and feed my Dobermans red meat, which I keep in this silver serving tray. Also, this is my Asian servant. He will surely be performing some kind of karate on you shortly.
Yeah, because he's wearing his pajamas and everything.
Right?
Nicely done. Also with us, Randy, if you want to throw your samurai attacker for a loop, just shut the door on him, Jordan.
Aloha, Brian. Scott, Brian.
Yeah.
This week on FilmSack, we visit California on the Seine, a truly French part of California, where even the trees and the snipers that lurk in them look entirely French, a place where every tour guide and helicopter pilot and, well, every extra person you might ever meet is a 22-year-old woman, a 22-year-old woman who wants you to save her from happy Doberman pinchers who are going to kill her among those trees I just mentioned. If you don't do something, but you don't care, you're just going to leave in a cab and leave her to die because there are only dozens of other women for you to deal with, you asshole.
Wow.
She was the one that was illiterate.
Yeah, of course.
Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
He's all like, let's have sex. She's like, I don't know how to read. And he's like, he doesn't miss a beat. He's like, okay, whatever. Let's just do it.
Yeah. He didn't care. Also with us, rounding it out, Mr. Brian, his big metal teeth never stop him from getting on a flight. Ibit.
Tea and cucumber sandwiches from a potential megalomaniac bent on world domination? No, sorry. Too dangerous. But I would like to take a crack at that centrifuge you've got over there. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Right?
That worked out great.
We all stayed within the castle. We all stayed within that little area. That
yeah.
What a weird movie. Ladies and gentlemen, join us now for the Film Sack episode about our first James Bond film. And we have chosen Moonraker. Now, you might say to yourselves, A, that's the one in space. You'd be right, at least part of it.
Sort
of. About the last 10 minutes or so are in space. But you would also maybe say to yourself, well, Wayne, that's not on streaming anymore. And if you'll recall, those who are astute followers of the show, we've mentioned various times on Twitter and other places that if you wanted to catch Moonraker, you best hurry because it was leaving streaming. And it did. It left. But it was still, I think, an important one for us to do. And we've talked about this one, I feel like, for years now. It's like, when are we going to get Moonraker back? And it would come for a while and then it would leave. And we'd say, all right, maybe next time. And so we decided to snipe it this time and get it in your face. And I think
and
it was worth
like
it.
I just like to put out there, you should always watch a movie before listening to the episode of FilmSack. I don't see a reason that FilmSack is any good if you don't watch the film and then listen to FilmSack.
Right.
This thing will be right back on streaming. Like, just wait. If you haven't seen it ever or in decades, just give it a few weeks. It'll be back on streaming.
I agree with the last part. I don't agree with the first part.
If it's not on streaming, it'll be on TBS and probably within the next 5 hours.
It's probably playing now is what's happening. I disagree with the first part, though. We got listeners going, yeah, I barely watch the movies, and you guys are hilarious, and this and that and the other. I think it's important, though, that you at least have a cultural point of reference for Moonraker. And so we're going to try, for those who didn't see it, the best we can over the next hour or so to explain kind of where this movie is, comes from, and how they'd maybe make it today. I mean, there's a lot. I think there's a lot to say about Moonraker that I didn't expect in this new viewing of it.
Right. And if you can't catch Moonraker, you can watch Inside Moonraker, the documentary.
Shut up. That's a thing.
It's about 45 minutes and it's free on VHD.
I only watched the first few minutes of the Inside Moonraker thing, and I was like, okay, I just watched this movie. I don't need to watch it again. Right. Did it ever go anywhere?
Yeah.
It's a documentary on Moonraker.
But here's the thing, the documentary gets into more than I can't speak to because I haven't seen it, but I'll bet they talk more about the practical effects that were in this film, way more than you'd expect, and they were all pretty good and kind of daring. I have a screenshot of James Bond putting his head square in some dude's butthole. And that wasn't him, obviously, but it was some good stunt work going on.
I wanted to describe that as Skyrimming. I think that's
I like to call it trying to get the part in GoldenEye. There you go. GoldenEye. Yeah, get it? GoldenEye.
Moonraking.
Yeah, Moonraking.
giving another man a Skyrim job.
That's even better. Moonraking. Mm-hmm. All right. Good stuff, everybody. It's Moonraker. It's James Bond. Scott Fletcher prepared a little something for us to explain. Here it is.
Moonraker. Agent 007 blasts into orbit in this action-packed adventure that takes him not only to Venice, Italy, and Rio de Janeiro, but to outer space as he investigates the hijacking of an American space shuttle by a power-mad industrialist.
How dumb does it sound on the face of it, though, the outer space part? Sounds like a bad idea.
Almost as dumb as it plays out.
It's
the thing. It sounds like a pretty good sci-fi movie.
Well,
I don't know if it sounds like a good James Bond movie, but it certainly sounds like something I'd watch.
Well, everyone tells me it's a good Ian Fleming book. I haven't read it.
Right, right.
And this was the first. This marked the first James Bond film to directly adapt a book.
No.
What I read.
Yeah, that's wrong. That's a big lie.
Okay, for starters,
it's the two things that has to do with the Ian Fleming book. It's got James Bond in it. And it's got a villain named Drax.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And it's called Moonraker.
Right. But this is. Let me take it back then. This is their first attempt to take a story from the books and outside of regular characters and stuff.
Completely rewrite it?
Yeah. Well, yes, and they did. Okay. You're right about that. And there's a lot of valid reasons why people hate the treatment here. But it's the first one where they said, yeah, we're going to take that and we're going to do that. And then the next one, and correct me if I'm wrong, the next time they tried to do this was Casino Royale, I think.
I don't think any of those other things were books.
Casino Royale was a completely different movie than book. And Moonraker is a completely different movie than the book. But it's the 11th James Bond film, and it was the 11th in a row that was based on an Ian Fleming book, at the very least.
But Moonraker was the third book that Ian Fleming, the third James Bond book that that Ian Fleming wrote. So
now, Brian, you're the big expert around here on the James Bond business. At least you're the biggest fan, I think, in the room.
Sure.
You've got multiple DVD, Blu-ray. Like, you buy all the collections.
I've got the Bond 50 Blu-ray set and that.
So don't worry about getting it online. Just hit up it.
Come over to my house. You can. It's playing here almost as frequently as TBS.
IBTS or whatever you're going to call your awesome
QBIS.
There you go. QBIS. So I want to just from you first.
Yeah.
Have you read the book?
I have not read the book. I've probably read half of the Ian Fleming novel. Or actually, I should say I've read half of the James Bond novels. Moonraker is not one of the ones I've written. Okay. I've read.
Are you afraid to read it because it's in space?
No. As a matter of fact, and I think very little from what I've the synopsis I've read of the book. Very little of it takes, if any of it takes place in space. It's all about more missiles rockets and stuff like that. The Moonraker is a rocket in the book, not a space shuttle. Space this was written in 55.
Oh,
yeah. Right.
Even if they wrote it today, I hope it's just a missile. Like the problem with the movie for me, and this is kind of what I was trying to get to, of all the James Bond movies, and we grew up, we were the Roger Moore people, pretty much. We were that audience. Right. Before that, it was the other ones, but that's who we had. And as a kid, I remember loving all the movies. They'd come out and I just love them, even the one with the girl with the mustache in the 80s. I don't remember the name of that one. But that was really good, and I really liked Spy Who Loved Me, and I thought these movies were great, and I had a great time with all of them, except at the time, when I was young anyway, Moonraker struck me as a giant shark jump for right. good mm-hmm. or for ill. I felt like, even as a kid, I was like, well, wait a minute. None of this is very realistic. You clearly, this isn't a thing you'd really do in a spy world. I mean, you're asking me to suspend my disbelief about a really unbelievable idea. And I never kind of got over it. So I kind of hated this movie growing up. This was my least favorite Bond movie.
Yeah.
Really? And this was my favorite.
What? Really?
Okay.
True story. This is when I was growing up.
Okay.
As an adult, there's other ones that I like. But this one as a kid was my favorite because it had Jaws in it. I mean, he was an absolute, he was a bigger than life supervillain.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Who was not in the book, by the way.
No.
Just right.
Also, barely in Vegas when we saw him. But yeah.
To distinguish myself from Brian Ibbett.
I did see him drive by when we were at the Star Trek convention in Vegas a year ago. Yeah. I did see Richard Kiel drive by on a Rascal scooter.
Total Rascal.
He's got medical issues, I think, is the...
Are you being serious? Thought you'd been like a lookalike.
No, he totally was there.
No, Richard Kiel was there, yep. And he drove by on his Rascal scooter and kind of smiled at us as he drove by.
I had a really hard time. Look, it's easy for me to point to a freaky looking old actor like we saw here at Salt Lake City Comic Con. We just saw what's his name, Chewbacca,
Peter Mayhew,
and mm-hmm. he's weird looking, but it was not hard for me to explain to my kids who this is and why he's there. Like, it was very easy and they were all excited about that. I tried to do this with Richard Kiel in Vegas with my same children, and that was really hard for me to explain why that guy mattered, why he was a big deal to me growing up.
Donut. I don't understand.
You can't see his teeth, you know.
The guy who's a shark? Huh?
Exactly. They just looked at me nonplussed. But anyway, so Dunaway, back to you, though. What was it about this movie that made you love it so much as a kid? That's crazy to me.
As a kid, it was very boring. I mean, come on. Bond was nothing but about a suave, debonair guy trying to get in the pants of many women. Whoa. And, you know, I'm a kid, so I'm like, whatever, I don't care about women. But now you show me a giant dude chasing you down while you're parachuting with giant jaws and trying to kill you and biting through, you know, cables on cable cars and stuff. I'm sold. So, you know, this is, forget exotic locations and all that crap. This had a space scene where they had space shuttles, and not just one space shuttle,
1700
1700 space shuttles.
Many space shuttles.
Yeah, there were many space shuttles.
This was 79, so it was definitely, you know, it was definitely like, okay, well, you know, we didn't take this to space. Maybe it was a little bit influenced. I don't know if the decision was influenced much by Star Wars and the success or not.
I'm sure it had something to do, but also you gotta give credit just to the space program at the time anyway, because shuttles were a new thing and everybody was flipping out, and that seemed like the future. And I think they played off of that a little bit. But
new that people had no idea how they worked.
They're better parallel parkers than you thought.
I could probably just launch my space shuttle right off the top of a plane.
Sure. Send in the Marines. What are they flying? More space shuttles.
Yeah, right.
They just got a bunch of them ready to roll.
We could be in space in 10 minutes. Just hop on.
Yeah. I do, as a kid, remember, though, so vividly the space scenes and nothing else.
Yeah. Right.
The ski tram. I remember that whole thing with Jaws. That whole thing's very vivid. And then the space stuff. But honestly, I thought those were two different movies. I really didn't know they were the same movie until now.
Here's a crazy thing, Scott. Jaws is only in two movies.
Right. This and what was the other
Spy
one?
Who Loved Me.
That's it.
And he's the only henchman ever to appear in multiple James Bond movies.
But you feel like Oddjob and Jaws are in at least five movies each.
It does feel like it. They're pretty iconic.
It's just not the case. And Jaws may have appeared in another one, except they wrote him into a corner. You know, near the end of the film, Jaws has a change of heart when he realizes that he's not perfect.
And the bad
guy's plan is to make a perfect society. And, like, all you can do with Jaws at that point is blast him off into space and wonder if you're ever going to see him again. And the answer is no.
No.
But it did bring up a weird thing that they said. Like, you almost think this is one of those scenes they inserted after test audiences. Oh, we feel bad that Jaws helped him out, and now Jaws and his girlfriend are just going to float away and die somewhere.
Right.
It seemed like this added in scene, oh, he'll be fine. It's only 100 miles to Earth. in a giant metal. Well,
of course he'll be fine. He has fallen from an airplane into a circus tent. He has fallen off the top of Iguazu Falls.
Yeah. Right.
He has crashed through a building inside a gondola. And by the way, right before meeting the love of his life, who has perma braids.
The Swiss Miss he fell in love with. Yeah. She reminded me of the Swiss
guy.
Lady.
this guy is indestructible, and he's indestructible in ways that I just can't believe. There is such nonsense on his indestructibility.
I would love to see a crossover of Wolverine and him go head to head.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah.
I'd pay for that.
That feels like a thing they'd do if we were in a different time. You know, that's a crossover you would make. That's a mistake you would make in Hollywood in 1979.
I got to tell you a story. So I haven't seen this movie in a while. And unlike Brian Ibbett, I'm the guy who read all the books many, many times. I've certainly seen all the movies many times, but I don't own all the Blu-rays or anything. I've read all the books. Right. I love the books. And my memory of Moonraker, which I haven't seen in at least 10 years, was that Jaws crashes through the building in the gondola, and he comes off, and he's sort of like pushing some crap around, and there's a girl trying to help him, and he sees her, and it's Love at First Sight, which is the most ridiculous thing, and they play that Love at First Sight song.
Whatever. Yeah. Don't be poo-poo in Love at First Sight.
Wait,
in
that, my what song memory, is that? Is that the... Da, 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 da,
da, da, da, da, song. Okay. So in my memory, he smiles at her, and he has those silver teeth, and she smiles back, and she's got braces.
Right.
And by the way, in my memory, the reason that makes a connection is that he like lifted something off of her, like he helped her. In the actual movie, not only does he not help her, but they've got nothing in common. And I don't understand how my memory was so messed up.
No, the braces thing, you're not the only one. Brian's not the only one. I totally remember that.
I know. I don't know what the deal is, if they just decided to change that or something.
Yeah, DVD release got switched around or something.
George Lucas in or Spielberg guns out.
Yeah. But like, everybody has a real problem. You know, dental work is a real – I have some childhood memories. I think we're going to CGI those out of everything.
The whole braces thing didn't do well with chest audience. So.
Most James Bond films are moments of action insanity followed by moments of farce, right?
Yeah.
And this is a moment of farce, like the ridiculous flotilla in Venice scene. And in that farce, I'm like, how do I have these false memories? Yeah. That's really, really, really weird. Yeah. Like, it's one thing to remember James Bond being more suave than he actually is, but how do I remember Jaws hooking up with Perma Braid being a better story than is actually in the movie? Because what's in the movie is stupid.
Well, what ends up in the movie is Frankenstein's monster, really. It's him finding the girl down by the river and not killing her.
Right.
That's it. So, that's really weird because the braces thing, I wrote that down. I was like, I swear that was in there. Something changed. Now I'm worried about other things. Like, what else changed?
There's one other thing I want to say, and that is you brought up the phrase jump the shark.
Yeah.
For a lot of James Bond fans, this series jumps the shark again and again and again.
Yeah.
Like, it starts out pretty serious with Dr. No and Russia with Love, and then people love to say it jumped the shark with Goldfinger. And then they love to say, well, it jumped the shark with Honor Majesty's Secret Service because that was George Lazenby. And then it jumped the shark when Live and Let Die came out, and that was Roger Moore, right? Yeah. Like, over and over and over. This, the biggest shark jumping by far is GoldenEye, which is really, really sad because that made such a great video game on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, but I remember actually kind of liking, I'm with you that it is, that movie is trying to be like the camp of the old ones, the old previous Jump the Shark ones. But for some reason, that one really worked for me. It's one of the few that did. In that whole era of who was right before him? I always forget his name.
Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton. I hated all those.
Timothy Dalton made two films, and both of them were the most faithful to the books that had ever been made.
And I think that's why I didn't like him. I think it's why.
And
I didn't
even
like him.
And even the look of Bond, like the always brooding, you know, not a chipper guy whatsoever, like Sean Connery and Roger Moore made him seem. The Timothy Dalton one seemed to always capture that. Like, he was always just really jaded and pissed off at the world.
A little bit manic for my taste. I always thought he seemed like he's a loose cannon. He's about to pop, and he's
especially in License to Kill, because he gets decommissioned, and so he's really upset. But I want to ask Brian Ibbett, because you're a James Bond fan, if you could only pick one, and don't count Daniel Craig. We'll talk about Daniel Craig next week. If you could only pick one of these films, and this is all you got, you know, like the rest of them are going to go away the rest of your life.
So straight up through all the Remington Steel ones, straight up. So no, no Craig and forward. That's an interesting question.
I can only pick one James Bond film or one James Bond actor.
Film. One film.
Goldfinger. And this is.
Wow.
Really?
Goldfinger!
I really enjoy that. I enjoy the locales. I enjoy the...
I love the locales.
I mean, it's, you know, it's, you know, you get this one, you've got Rio de Janeiro and a little bit of California. You got LAX before they put anything there, really.
Yeah, yeah. It was so weird. Now it was out in the middle of a field.
Right.
Goldfinger. That's a good choice. Like, Brian Ibbett has spoken. He likes the pussy galore.
Yeah, he loves that. Dunaway, give you, what's your favorite?
Oh, see, you're going to put me in an uncomfortable situation because I'm going to have to go for the one that people, they're not, everybody is a Roger Moore, you know, fan. And I've got to say, For Your Eyes Only, I've watched that one probably more than all the rest of
them. That's
the
one with the girl with the mustache. That's the one with the skiing at the top at the beginning. It's totally her.
There's a lot of skiing in a lot of James Bond movies. But
yeah, but there's a ton in that one, and there's lots of mustache on ladies. Okay, so that's one. Mine is also a Roger Moore thing. And again, this is all pre-Craig, all right? Because if you asked me what the Craig movies included, I'd change my answer. But
that's
it's smart to do. For me, it's The Spy Who Loved Me. And I don't know why. I don't think there's much going on there that's like, oh, groundbreaking business happening here. Like, I think it's just right time, right place for me. I remember really liking the song. I like that. What's her name?
I'm Carly sorry.
Me. What?
Carly Simon.
Yes, Carly Simon. Yeah, I was kind of a Carly Simon nerd.
I'm sorry, Scott, but the underwater effects in that movie are so bad.
Oh, they're horrifying.
So bad.
They're horrifying. Like, they're terrible.
Not as bad as the outer space effects. The gravity. The gravity.
You know what? You're right. So of the, I would say Moonraker used to be my least favorite. That's not that anymore. I think this reviewing was good for me. It actually elevated it a little bit. There's just a lot more stuff I would have gotten better if I had been an adult, like the earlier parts of the plot, the stuff where they weren't in space. As a kid, I was just like, well, let's just go to space. And then that was just disappointing. So it's not my least favorite. I think my least favorite is Live and Let Die.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I feel like that because that is that's a weird James Bond movie trapped in jive time. It's pimp world is what it is.
Right.
I would still put Live and Let Die in my top five or six probably. I really like that one.
I like the song, the Beatles song.
You know, I think we should pick our worst too because I'm going to go with, and this may get me a little bit of heat, but I didn't care for Die Another Day. And I think it was because I had such high expectations. I thought I was okay when I watched it the first time, but I've actually went back and watched it again, and it does.
Remind us who's the Bond, I forget.
Pierce Brosnan.
That's with Halle Berry.
It was
his last one.
Oh, but then you know what? That one did have a sparkle of true Bondness in it, which was, and I don't mean this ironically, but it had that North Korean guy with the
diamonds in his face.
Embedded in his face. Right, right. That's cool. Yeah. Like, you got to have more of that for me to get real excited. What was the James Bond movie where the main bad guy had webbed fingers and feet? Who was that? Ooh. And he was all underwater, had a big underwater base.
Is that on Her Majesty's Secret Service?
Maybe. No, that's too old. It's somebody with like... It's,
right. The guy who had the underwater that they had to take a submersible down to...
Yes. And he did a lot of
And he had the big
monologue.
Window with all the stuff going across and the narrow jacket buttoned all the way up to the top.
Yes, yes, yes.
I want to say wasn't that Dr. No?
That may have been Dr. No. But that's awesome. Like that kind of stuff I'm into. So when
you're talking about Never Say Never Again. You're talking about the extras Sean Connery movie.
Maybe. I don't know.
Wait
a minute. What are you talking about?
It might be. I don't remember.
That's Never Say Never Again. And that is just a straight remake of Thunderball.
Right.
Yeah, because was Broccoli involved with that one? Didn't they like?
No, that was the whole reason is that that was the only one not protected by the copyright.
That's like the Doctor Who movie that was made for TV that nobody recognizes as part of the canon. That's kind of that same idea. People get irritated about that one. I don't know if that's the one with the web guy in it or not, but I stand firm that I think
Waterworld is that one.
We need more of that. And the reason I like the most recent Daniel Craig movie quite a bit, I think, is because we got back to some of that. That guy was nuts. Now, he was nuts in a more kind of grounded way, but I like that freaky, over-the-top monologue too much. You got something physically wrong with you. It was his jaw and that thing, but in this thing's got webbed hands and feet, so of course he's going to do something underwater. Like, that kind of stuff is cheesy but awesome, and there's never enough of that in the later movies for me. But the Korean guy kind of, you know, I'm just saying, the Korean guy had a touch of it.
Right, right.
That's all.
The Pierce Brosnan ones kind of really have, as I go back,
so awful.
The World Is Not Enough, with Denise Richards.
I forgot she was in that. Oh my gosh, dude!
Yeah. They're so awful.
I'm sure
every
very
single
mad.
One of them.
Yeah, I'm sure they're favorites, but
nobody's favorites. Nobody's favorites. Nobody loves Pierce Brosnan movies. At the time, we all lined up to watch them.
And oh, we were down with it.
Yeah, like, but.
Well, you remember all the talk. It was like, who should be the next James Bond? Everybody thought Pierce Brosnan should be the next James Bond.
Right, yeah, they thought, all right, he's got the look, he's suave, he's, you know, he's good looking, he's got the British accent, he's played a spy before. I guess he's played someone who's played a spy before.
Yeah. Right.
That's true.
But they stumbled through the door in GoldenEye with, him watching Sean Bean get killed at the beginning of the movie. And then you know, Sean Bean comes back and he's actually the bad guy.
And then re-kill him later, yeah.
Yeah. And everybody was like, whoa, wait a minute. It actually matters what's on the script. It's not just who plays the, you know, James Bond.
Yeah. I still like that one, though. Freaking Phoenix, Jean Grey with her legs.
Mm-hmm.
Doing what she does.
Famke Janssen.
With her legs.
Yeah, with the leg business she did. She'd strangle you.
Xenia on the top.
Yeah, Xenia on the top. See? She was that movie's attempt at being this thing. And they also, I mean, they try to get back to that with this latest James Bond, which I really, really liked Skyfall a lot. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Can I answer the question?
Yeah.
I
didn't
answer the
question. I'm sorry. We never found out your favorite or least favorite.
The best James Bond film still up until Daniel Craig comes along, because it gets really confused. with those last three movies, but up until that point, the best James Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service, because George Lazenby got the character and he understood that he was only going to ever get one shot at it. And it was, from beginning to end, the most faithful to everything, the least offensive, the most serious about its technology and so on. Right. I love On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and I highly recommend it.
Whatever happened? Why was it only his one shot? How did he know that? Like, wasn't he aiming to be the next dude, or was it a one off thing, and it was only ever intended to be?
He knew that
that's when they were. Sean Connery was like,
right. He knew they were going to get back together with Sean Connery. Sean Connery was a franchise,
right?
And
totally going to get back together. We're going to do it out.
And all in. And by the way, On Her Majesty's Secret Service is the source of the incredible John Barry score that gets revisited again and again and again.
That's true.
Propellerheads.
Except in GoldenEye. Yeah. GoldenEye is the one movie where a really great composer, what's his name? The one who composed The Professional and Fifth Element.
That guy. I know who you mean.
Anyway, a really great composer decides, no, I don't like this James Barry thing. I'm going to just do something else. But seriously, watch On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Yeah. Look past the fact that George Lazenby is a one-off, and you'll see a really good movie.
Mm-hmm. Plus, he gets married.
Yeah. Well, that's true. He does in that movie, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
He's age 74 now, still kicking it. Lives in Australia, South Wales, Australia. He was most recently in 2008 at a few cons in New York. So you can go.
Who are we talking? Are we talking about Roger Moore? Who are we talking about?
Lazenby.
Lazenby is okay.
Yeah, still kicking it. Still doing. Mm-hmm. Still doing the thing. Living the life.
Doing his thing.
what else here? There's a bit of trivia I found. It is the highest, or at the time was the highest grossing Bond movie up until the release of GoldenEye. GoldenEye is the only thing that had finally cracked that egg.
Wow.
So made a bunch of money.
Do you think it's the fact that you know, people saw this and vowed off, swore off James Bond movies for a few years?
That's a good question. Like,
once I see that pigeon do a double take, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. There is one farce scene too many in this movie.
Oh, it's like it's all the thrown out Monty Python sketches. I didn't like any of that stuff. It's terrible.
Like, how could you have this scene in Venice where a guy who's trying to assassinate Bond with knives gets killed, and falls into his own coffin, and immediately follow it with it was so.
Or when they get on horses and put on ponchos and hats, and the music is literally the Magnificent Seven's music theme.
Did you catch all of the homages to other franchise scores?
Yeah, and it irritated me every time they did it.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
It irritated you.
It did irritate me. Because this isn't... As an adult, as a kid, I didn't notice.
Okay.
As a kid, you're just like, oh, Western, oh, space, whatever. You didn't care. But now you just like, really, you're going to just invoke all this stuff. Why don't you just be James Bond and go kick some ass? Like, why are you, what are you doing?
This was the first Austin Powers movie.
It seriously was. And the producers went out of their way to go get the rights or permission to use all these different things because they had reached a point where the James Bond music itself was so entrenched and so obvious that they felt like other people might, you know, like have been ripping them off. So we might also pay homage to them. And, you know, this was also a film that only exists because of Star Wars. Like Star Wars happened and said, oh, well, we got to send James Bond to space.
Dig that one out. Yep, let's capitalize rewrite that. On that. Sure.
So the musical notes, like they kind of had to go there. And I thought it was really entertaining. Like I was sitting around waiting. Okay, so when's going to be the next spot where they – what was that? Was that from another movie? I don't know. Yeah. I thought that was entertaining.
Yeah, well, it's entertaining in a way that makes you have fun now. But I don't think if you're a serious James Bond fan, if you're serious about the books or the character or whatever, or maybe in the long shadow of the super serious most recent three, it's difficult to take this stuff
seriously. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's because I've, you know, been so spoiled by the Daniel Craig stuff that going back and watching this one just feels like complete farce and complete blasphemy to the James Bond lore and the character.
It's like going from Batman now to Tim Burton Batman.
Right.
And having the same reverence for it. You can't do it. But what you can do is go to audible.com and get an awesome audiobook. Did you know that? Were you aware of it? Were you aware of the breadth of books available to you at audible.com, audiblepodcast.com/filmsacks, where you can get one of those books absolutely free? Audible's been around for a while. And currently they're an Amazon company, which I don't even know when that happened, dude. Just kind of poof. But I like Amazon and trust them a lot, so why the heck not? Recently picked up The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman. Brand new book by Neil Gaiman. Also read by him for this version of the book, the audio book version. It's really, really good. Here's just a tiny taste of it. Check it out.
Chapter 1. Nobody came to my 7th birthday party.
Aw, man. I'm a giant fan of Neil Gaiman, and I'm a bigger fan of Audible.com. Audible.com takes care of all your audiobook needs. Over 150,000 titles, you guys. Do you realize how long it would take you in your lifetime to listen to all of them? I don't think you can. I don't think it's possible. So go get one for free. Go get it right now. And there aren't just one book by Neil Gaiman. There are many by Neil Gaiman, including American Gods, which is one of my favorite books of all time. Although less for the kids than this other one, I understand. Anyway, go check it out. Go get a free one. Get one on us. All you got to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. Get a free audiobook today. All right, more Batman comparisons. You just can't. Somebody else came along and said, for good or for bad,
or more like
you are, but
going from
it.
Batman now to the Adam West, the film, the 1966 Batman film.
Even that, yeah, that's even more drastic. I mean, that one is so drastic.
And they both
hurts.
Had a red bat phone.
Yeah, they did. They sure did. Yes. James Bond conquers space, of course, in this movie, but it is not the first time this has happened or with story elements dealing with outer space. Dr. No, You Only Live Twice and Diamonds Are Forever included story elements dealing with outer space. I don't remember any of that. So sure, why not? According to the trivia, that's true. The director's also still with us, 93 years old, kicking it.
Mm-hmm. Still, and he was the one responsible, actually, for You Only Live Twice and The Spy Who Loved Me. He did those before he did Moonraker, and never did, and that was the last
Moonraker
James
was
Bond film. Yeah, and then he did Educating Rita and Shirley Valentine. Did something in 1995 called Haunted.
Do you think the double take pigeon was the end? Do you think that was it?
I think so. I was watching this. I was thinking, God, I'm so glad they made a James Bond movie after this one, because it could have easily been like, all right, I think we've run its course. We've got pigeons doing double takes and.
Yeah, and a reminder to folks, not a CGI double take, not a sweet animated, hand-animated, or even an animatronic one, a reverse video. Film double take.
Reverse video.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and of course they, like, you're so glad they made James Bond films after this one. For Your Eyes Only, then Octopussy, then A View to a Kill. Like, I think those are all fine. Yeah, yeah, fine James Bond films for what they set out to be.
Yeah. They were fun, lots of fun.
Yeah.
Did Octopussy have the guy in the wheelchair with the cat that got chucked down the big pipe at the beginning?
No. That's For Your Eyes Only.
Okay.
That's For Your Eyes Only. Yeah.
All right. I never remember. For Your Eyes Only is the mustache girl, and then that's all I remember. And Octopussy had saw blades. People are yo-yoing at each other. I remember that. I remember. I if Brian has all this, you have this collection of James Bond stuff. I am the polar opposite of you. And it's not that I don't like James Bond. I just didn't collect any of it or really obsess on it.
What cracks me up, and I hearing you guys talk about, all right, which one is the skiing? Which one's this? It's funny. I remember scenes. You know, I hear scenes like, okay, I couldn't tell you which one that I can have an educated guess based on, of course, which character's playing Bond and all that. But but sometimes, you know, you say, all right, we got a skiing scene, then some underwater crap, and then
like there's a scene, there's a skiing scene in a James Bond film, Brian, where James Bond goes down the mountain in a cello case.
I remember that.
You remember it, right? Yeah. Which movie is it?
I couldn't tell you.
I think it's The Living Daylights. I don't know.
I know he skips across people's dinners, and they're outside eating dinner in the Alps or something, and he skips over their food
across a picnic table.
Yeah, and he's being chased by motorcycles that have tracks on their. On their wheels. I remember that.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, man. It's damn good. Drax, bad guy.
Yeah.
First of all.
Looks like a big Peter Dinklage.
He sure does.
Right.
Elon Musk of his time in this film. Basically Mr. Billionaire, Trillionaire, Space Explorer Man, or at least you think so. But with a name like Drax. Mm-hmm. Drax. Anyone ever sit there going, I wonder if he's the bad guy in this.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. With plus the goatee. Like the minute you see a guy with a goatee, you're like, oh, that's the bad guy.
Yeah, that guy bugged me the entire time.
And what's really weird to me is there's a scene pretty early in the film, first third, where Drax takes James Bond out where they're doing some pheasant hunting, and Drax has a sniper in the tree, and James Bond is given a shotgun and a rifle. And with one shot, James Bond takes out the sniper instead of the pheasant. Now, at that point, James Bond walks away, and I'm thinking, why don't you just put the gun in Drax's mouth and pull the trigger, and then we're all good. You have a license to kill, my man.
Well, there's all these. I mean, the movie's so full of these missed opportunities. There are people who are like, no, I'm going to take the absolute longest, most drawn-out way to kill somebody possible.
Yeah.
You know, we've got James Bond trapped in a gondola in a little cable car. We can stop that cable car. Why don't we just let him freeze out there or die or whatever?
Leave him out there forever.
I mean, this is obviously tropes that people have made fun of before. It's laying him on a table and having a laser slowly inch toward his crotch and monologue too much to the point that James Bond figures out a way to get out. Like these, and again, that's a scene I know exists, but I couldn't tell you which film it's in.
That's Goldfinger, baby.
Is it? Okay. All right.
You expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond. I expect you to die.
But real slow, like, and have it take forever.
I'm not going to stand here and watch.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that because I feel like it's a trope James Bond needs, and you kind of even get it in the new one. So the example for me is Casino Royale with that awesome Chris Cornell freaking song at the beginning, where he's getting his sack battered by the dude.
Oh my God.
Now that's apparently more torturous, right? Like it's more like, oh geez, well, welcome to the modern era, everyone. But it still has that quality that James Bond always had, which is you putting me in this very uncomfortable position and taking way too long to get out of me the information you need. And I'm going to figure out a way out of here. Like, it's just, it is a James Bond thing. So I'm cool with it. Even when it was cheesy and dumb, or even now that it's kind of harsh and dark, I'm cool with it. I'm fine with it. I am not fine with Japanese henchmen running around in their pajamas, though. Not cool.
Oh, dude, but Hockey Ninja was so awesome. Oh, Hockey Ninja. I love Hockey Ninja. I cannot say enough in favor of Hockey Ninja.
Can you tell that this is him? Hold on, let me find this real quick. This is Hockey Ninja making a sound right here. That's my favorite part of Hockey Ninja.
So in the ultimate Chekhov's gun, we first get a scene where a tour guide, who's a 22-year-old female, as I referenced earlier, is showing people a museum completely full of things that are glass. Everything there is glass. All of the shelves are glass. All of the things on display are glass. The floor is glass. And then later, James Bond gets to fight Hockey Ninja in a way that is like they got together earlier. In the cafeteria, they crossed paths, and Hockey Ninja was like, you know, I got to kill you later. And James Bond's like, well, if we're going to fight, let's meet up in the Museum of Glass. Because I want to beat the shit out of everything in there first.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
old meat china shop.
really, really remarkable how much destruction they do in that freaking hockey ninja. Oh, I love
it. Tore it up, dude. That guy was freaking
ninja,
great.
Hockey ninja runs the centrifuge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Only he can only do it so well.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He's only got so much skill running the centrifuge. He accidentally breaks it right before killing James Bond.
Yeah.
You know?
I like how he walked away, just kind of looked down at him and walked away, and I'm thinking, well, this isn't going to end well. And where it ended well was in the glass right. museum.
Right? Is it too early to mention tropes? Since we talked about them
never. Here's your new trope sound. Just kidding. Here you go. Go.
Well, maybe it's not as much a trope as just a stupid mechanic that they use. You can shoot the dashboard of any type of vehicle or centrifuge. And if you shoot the dashboard, it immediately defeats everything, and it just
Achilles
stops.
Heel. Yeah. Yes,
I had that exact same trope written down. I put simply shoot at the control gauges in a helicopter or a zero-G tester thing, and it will all break.
It'll all break. Because you keep everything in the controls. That's where I keep everything. All my gauges, that's where everything
is. Also, when you can't remember the word centrifuge, you write down zero-G tester thing. This film apparently used the largest set ever built in France, according to Wikipedia, and I love that kind of thing because I assume it's still a place you could go, or they're still filming things there. You could do things there, but that's where they built this this lab, or not lab, but whatever, you know, his secret layout or whatever the hell that thing is.
Right.
Was this the movie where the guys? Yeah, it is. This is the movie where the guys accidentally, or no, James Bond went out there and put one of their gas balls on top of the thing, and then they went to move the furniture and it fell,
yeah,
and everybody
broke,
got
and they gassed themselves.
Now, right. I just want to point that out, this little fact that we talked about how we remember these specific scenes, but we couldn't place the film they're in. I'm having that problem now with this.
With the movie you just saw.
Yeah.
That's
weird.
And that's because every James Bond film has scientists. 85% of them are 22-year-old females, and this is one of those weird situations where they march in a couple of scientists who are old white men. And by the way, back at MI6, everybody's an old white man, including Miss Moneypenny.
Right.
And
no
they march
Moneypenny in this one. No.
Yeah, they march these guys in just to kill them, just to gas them, and it's very confusing because you've gotten used to every extra being a 22-year-old female. And these guys, like, oh my gosh, this is just like every other film that they ever made for James Bond.
Right,
they're wearing white lab coats, and James Bond happens to be in the airtight room or something.
The elderly on display, though, back at MI5. There's nobody in there.
Major
nobody's
old
under,
man smell in that place.
Nobody under the age of 58 is allowed to work for the Queen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do pay attention, 007.
It's good to see
Try
old Q.
Try to take care of this.
I like old
Desmond
Q.
Level, yeah. Desmond Llewellyn.
Is that his name? Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he is great.
He was still in some of the... He was in GoldenEye still, I think.
Right. What's the one where he does the handoff basically to John Cleese?
That would have been this one.
Is
after
that Die Another, I think Die Another Day.
Die Another
right?
Day. Yep. Because he died that other day. He died then.
Oh, didn't he? He did. Yeah.
Just so you know, Scott, MI6 is the British CIA.
I keep seeing MI5 because of that show.
That would be the British FBI or something like that.
It's that show on Netflix. It's good, by the way, but I keep confusing those two.
Oh, dude, by the way, such an amazing trope in this film. It's not in enough James Bond films, but there's a American, there's an American CIA agent, and she's so American.
Yes, right. Apple pie and American. Yes. These movies always had that. They usually had that bald, tough dude.
It was a Felix Leiter,
that guy.
Usually his CIA buddy,
right? And he's in Casino Royale. He's just that black dude. I can't think of his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that guy's great. But yeah, I love that trope. That trope's great because it's like, well, hey, here we are in an American market where most of these tickets are going to be sold, at least at the time, mm-hmm. with less of an international movie industry back then. And we got to make sure to throw in the jive talking, smack talking American, or else this isn't a true James Bond film. Do the books have that at all? There's none of that weirdness,
really.
Right? Okay. Yeah. All right.
No, they jump around. Like James Bond often encounters someone, you know, some woman from Bolivia who happens to also be a secret agent or what have you. But for the most part, it's not this continuous return to the United States of America as a supplier of the counterpart.
Right. I don't like that. I used to like it when I was younger because I thought, yeah, there we are. Look at us. And now I don't like it. I find it pandering and annoying now. So
yeah,
take that for what it's worth, lady. All right, moving on.
Wow.
Let's see. What else was I going to say? Oh, I know. I got another trope here for you. In the 70s, Doberman dogs were the evil dogs. That's what we used.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't. It probably made a lot of kids naturally afraid of Dobermans. I think films like this probably ruined Dobermans for a lot
but
of kids. Like,
what really got me as a kid, and I think most of us are going to agree, Magnum P.I. Magnum P.I. is the Dobermans are evil source for
Do you remember there was a whole series? It was like the Doberman Club or something like that, and it was like nothing but Dobermans.
Really?
It was like its weird TV series.
I remember. Doberman Club. No.
I don't remember if it was like the Doberman Club. It was something like that. It was like a gang of Dobermans.
Well, I just remember like McHiggins had a batch of them. He'd set on mm-hmm. people there on Magnum right. PI. And like every show, if there was a dog ever involved in a
Zeus,
security
Apollo.
Thing, yeah, right. That's right. They were Zeus and Apollo. Oh my gosh.
Now, I remember the reason why I thought Doberman Pinschers were bad because they're called Doberman Pinschers. I mean, that's
right.
They pinch you.
Yeah.
Their teeth.
And then for the last 20 years, it's been Rottweilers. Yeah. And my point is, it's Germans. Germans are we're just wrong about dogs.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. German Shepherds are sometimes bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, dude. Now we got it all figured out.
The Doberman gang.
But the Schnauzer is still untouched.
Yeah. The Schnauzer's doing okay. Get him, Apollo. Yep.
Right.
Dogs, they know do all dogs come from Germany?
Now that you mention it. Let's see, Cockashitzapoo. Where do those come from?
There was the Doberman Gang in 1972, a film by a talented animal trainer who uses a pack of Dobermans to commit a bank robbery. That's what I was thinking about. And
put
it was
that
a series.
On the film sack list.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah, yes. The score was composed by Alan Silvestri.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so, get that on the list. So find that somewhere. That sounds great to me. Let's see. I got a Bond trope. This is an easy one, but first lady he gets it on with gets killed early every time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
She's mm-hmm. always expendable. The minute you see her, you go, yep, she's dead in about 10 minutes. So, yeah.
No, and no woman, actually no character that he meets is ever what they first appear to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's.
Yeah.
You know.
That first one, she dies falling from a plane.
Yeah.
Then a later one gets killed by Doberman Pinschers.
Which she could have avoided just by climbing any of the millions of trees she was passing by.
I'll run into the forest, but then from there, I'm just going to slow down.
Because Dobermans are known for their climbing skills.
I was so frustrated by the fact that this was supposed to be in California. It just really frustrated
me. Yeah, none of it looked right, even to me.
We brought over this whole chateau brick by brick. You know, I should have brought the Eiffel Tower. Oh, he bought it, but they wouldn't let him move it. Like, why not just set it in France? Yeah.
It would have been better in France. Well, it's because you had to have the U.S. part of this, and
I guess
we're NASA and all that, whatever. Okay, so we talked about the double take of the pigeon that ruined it.
Yes.
The funniest thing, though, like that made me laugh because it was so bad. But what really made me laugh the most in the movie, the entire film, was the dude popping out of the coffin
and shooting with
a machine gun. That was great.
That did make me laugh.
Again, all right, we've got this guy, you know, this henchman. He's going to kill James Bond. He's a good knife thrower. Great. Let's put him on a boat in a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll just radio him to let him know when it's time to pop out of that coffin and start throwing knives. Yeah. That's not convoluted at all, and nothing could possibly go wrong.
No, it seems easy, really.
And he wasn't that good at throwing knives either, because Bond, like, retaliated like with one knife.
Right. Yeah. Bond dodges the knife. It goes into the boat. He picks it out of the wood, throws it back, dead center shot.
Right. Like, whatever you can do, I can do better.
You forget also how sexist these movies were back then. And
no, you don't. This movie will remind you of every possible way that it is
He is an asshole in this film.
Mm-hmm. He really is.
Oh, scientist? You're a woman. Huh. Wow.
Thanks, James.
No, really. Show me Dr. Goodhead.
I'll bet you later.
No, I know. Yeah, okay. No. Bring out the real doctor. He's got to be
a man, right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody named Goodhead can be a doctor. It's just so sexist, and it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. I enjoy it on that level. It makes me laugh. Let's see. What else? In space, even flipping a switch happens in slow motion.
Right. Yeah, you turn off the gravity, and you turn on the slow motion inducer.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a great Simpsons episode, though. I don't know if you guys remember this, but a great Simpsons episode, probably season 7 or 8, something, where I didn't know it at the time, but having rewatched this, it is taken right from this movie. The Homer meets a guy, everybody loves him. He's super, it's that has nothing to do with the movie, but he's super like gregarious and interesting and funny. And he takes him all to his big lab or whatever. And it turns out it's a space station where they're going to slowly send these bombs out to kill everybody and start the planet over because everyone sucks. And it's right. awesome. It is a great, great episode of The Simpsons. And there's tons of references, including a Jaws reference and everything else in that. For this episode, I would actually say a better 25 minutes than this entire hour and 45, I would say, is that Simpsons episode. So there you have it. What else? You guys got anything else? What else? Nothing.
Oh, there's so many, man.
Give me another
the
one.
The tropes. It's a trope fest.
Trope fest.
The sexy stewardess.
Yeah.
Like right at the beginning.
Right, her.
This movie literally has a shark pool. Yeah. Only it's a python,
anaconda or python.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuffed animal. Let's just pop out all these women, say anything, and hope that he stands on that one little square that happens to dump him into the snake pool.
Yeah, stuff is so bad, but it's so I don't want it without it.
It's not, you know, every square would have dumped you into the snake pool. There's just a guy playing an organ of buttons, right? And he's got to know which one to hit depending on which square.
Number 19.
I've got to get that one. This movie has the social Darwinist evil guy. It's the biggest trope ever. They all want to take care of everybody and start over.
Yeah.
This movie had Space Marines.
Space Marines. Love Space Marines. Right.
Dump out all the people who apparently just ride in the cargo bay of the shuttle.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Space can fly Marine. With their lasers. Yeah.
Love those
One
guys.
Big gun? No. A bunch of guys with little guns.
Yeah, little That's guns. Oh, they'll have body armor? No. It's just tinfoil. Just wrap them in that. So we got this. We got this.
The other guys will have lasers. We've got the lasers, right?
One of my favorite tropes in the film is the trope of the huge guy plus tiny girl.
Musgrove.
Oh, it's the Frankenstein story, right?
Yeah.
All that is. It's like, oh, she loves him because he's huge and enormous and hideous, but can see through all of that. And he loves her because she's hot and has big boobs, I guess. I don't know what the deal is.
I don't know. Like in Wreck-It Ralph, that trope, it doesn't fit that description. But man, it's just so hard to, it's hard to accept. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why movies do it because you're looking at them like, no, there's not love at first sight here. I don't know. Maybe she's drugged or something.
Hold on now. That's a good point. Is there any real world analog to this trope? There isn't one. I can't think of any time anywhere I've seen anybody do this real life.
You know, big woman Nicole Kidman fell in love with that little tiny Tom Cruise guy.
But the other way around.
Wait, oh, right. So flip it and you're good. But no, this idea that in the
movies, it's Thor and Natalie Portman. It's Hellboy and Liz. It's, you know, it's it's just so weird.
Well, I mean, do we know what Vin Diesel's wife or The Rock's wife look like? I'm sure they're not as big as they are.
Okay, no. Relatively speaking, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's wife looks small. I'm saying in movies, it's like that song we were talking about, na 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 na. Like just because they happen to be so different, they have to kiss.
Is The Rock married? Right. I don't know if he's even married. Is he married? I wonder.
Who knows?
Dwayne Johnson. Hold on.
Right.
Dwayne Johnson, wife. Dwayne Johnson's wife. Okay, here we go. Spouse. Danny Garcia, 1997 to now. So, and there she is. She's lovely.
She's lovely. She's quite beautiful.
And she's not giant or anything. So,
No, she's actually, I don't mean this in a bad way. This is actually a really big compliment. She looks kind of average, which is fantastic.
No, that's great. And that guy, dude's a devoted dude, too.
And,
so.
And this is a trope, by the way, that's she's undone beautiful. by its own counter trope, right? Which is movies where the huge guy happens across a huge girl and they have to kiss.
Right.
Right?
That never happens.
So it's.
Jamie Lannister and what's her name?
They're twins. Yeah. Come on.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. It is a weird thing that people keep going back to the well for. I just
tell you something that annoys me about all these movies.
What's that?
Every one of them. And it's the secret agent secret fights. Mm-hmm. I hate a secret agent secret fight. If you are fighting for your life, you're not going to give a crap if you're out in public.
Yeah.
And you don't want anybody to know you're fighting with Jaws or.
Right.
The crap ever you're fighting with. So you just kind of pause and put on a pause. It's like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Right.
We're not,
that would
we're
be
not
the one that there was a carnival going on. and Jaws stopped trying to kill Holly Goodhead because these people are
a bunch of people came around. Yeah,
like he would stop. Why would he stop?
Look at the man. He could murder everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta say, I do love the scene, the creepiest damn scene of giant clown dude coming down the alley towards Holly Goodhead.
Yeah, that was creepy. In fact, I captured it and almost used it for the album art or for the post art because it just was weird, but it is weird. Doesn't hold up holding still as well as it does moving, but that kind of stuff. Ugh. And Carnival and like that kind of thing, I don't like any of that. That stuff all freaks me out. Always has.
Really?
Yeah, don't like it. I don't see a party atmosphere. I see freaking weird voodoo and witchcraft coming at me.
I got to jump on Dunaway's bandwagon, though. There's a bunch of examples of like the wouldn't hit a girl trope all throughout this movie. Yep. Like if you just hit the girl, like so many things would turn out better for you.
Yeah, just hit the girl. You know? You'd be fine. It's not a problem.
Like hit the girl.
People,
thanks, Sebastian.
Like it's almost like this large, like gentleman fighting is the trope, right, Brian? Like a gentleman doesn't do all these things that anyone under this sort of duress would definitely
do. It's only when he's got no other option does James Bond try to kick Jaws in the nuts,
right? Exactly.
And then it's like metal there too.
All right, let's get to some clippies here. We got a few. I'll start with this one, clip from the very early in the film.
Any higher, Mr. Bond, my ears will pop.
You're going to die soon. You're not going to live very long.
There was a really good double entendre right before that about...
You will rupture my eardrums.
No.
I don't remember. What was it?
Something about her legs?
Penetration at
he's
the end.
Like, yeah, he's on his last leg. Right?
The last leg of his mission, yeah. Yes. And he's running his hand up her thigh? Yeah.
That guy's gross. Let's see. Bad Bond joke.
Good morning, Moneypenny.
James, why are you so late?
I fell out of an airplane without a parachute.
Oh, James. They may as well just have that sound. If you're going to have a double take pigeon,
it's the tone of his voice. Of course, they're not going to believe you if you say it in that tone.
Right.
If you're like, dude, you will not. Oh, I fell out of an airplane. Don't you want her to believe you?
Yeah. It's such a like, this is what I do when I'm not having tea kind of mentality about Britain in the 70s, I think. Here's another. This is cool gadget time.
It's activated by nerve impulses from the wrist muscles.
Like this?
Oh, James, you did it again. Please play attention, or have you said?
And wouldn't it be just a great change and freak people out if Q gave him a gadget that he didn't end up using?
Here's the thing.
It'll knock everybody out for in a 5-block radius. Use it very carefully, and then he just doesn't use it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it would be a.
In the later films, they love to have Q march him around in front of a backdrop of things that you don't ever see again.
Right. Yes,
right. But early
that has a gun that pops out of his mouth.
Right. Yeah. That's my lunch. These movies know there's no Chekhov's gun. If you see it once, you're going to see it again.
Yeah. Right. In the new one, they kind of go back to this where he sat down with him in a place in that gallery and they handed him a thing, and that's all you ever saw. You didn't see a giant lab full of crap.
Right. Which is cool. Very cool way to reboot that.
Nice
that
throwback, character. I thought.
Although, who puts a hand glider into a motorboat?
Nobody.
Here's the one thing you're probably never, ever, ever going to use is a hand glider in a motorboat, unless there's one specific circumstance.
Yeah, which they always have. Let's see. How about this one? Music from the 70s that I hated. So there's an interstitial that I couldn't stand. The limited horn section of the 1970s.
There's nothing wrong with that at all.
I love that.
Listen to it again. It's terrible. It's awful.
There's nothing at all wrong with that.
You're smoking crack. It's awful. It's bad. It's the worst thing you've ever heard.
It's really good.
It's the worst thing you've heard today. You haven't heard anything
else than that. I really miss the times when the scoring for these films was taken seriously.
Yeah.
And there's this huge stretch where all the films, the scores become like electronica and silly. Yeah. Like I thought that was actually one of the best things about the film.
You don't complain about the disco version of the Shirley Bassey song at the very end?
No, I hate that too. I hate that too.
Okay, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad.
But then in those closing credits, you actually get to read the statement, shot on location in Italy, Brazil, Guatemala, USA, and outer space.
face exclamation point.
Love that.
I do not know what this clip is, but I'm going to play it nonetheless. So let's see what this is.
May I press you to a cucumber sandwich?
Thank you, no, nothing at all.
Oh, a cucumber sandwich.
What do you think he said?
Press you to?
I think I put press. I wrote on this clip, press you to something, because I couldn't understand what he said. But now I think I just heard it. So here it is again. Whoops. Why didn't it play?
May I press you to a cucumber sandwich?
Thank you.
Okay, now I'm still confused. May I press you?
It still doesn't make sense. Yeah, can I?
Well, it does.
Can I press you to a beer?
That's what it means. May I press you as a man?
Come over, Mike. Can I press you to a Mike's Hard Lemonade?
Can we get a French guy right in and tell us if that's crap or not? I'd like to know if that's a thing you'd say. That seems really dumb to me. Sexy name and sexism in the same clip. So here you go. Two for one.
Yes, my name is Bond. James Bond. I am looking for Dr. Goodhead.
You just found her.
A woman.
Jeez, dude.
Asshole.
Yeah, why did you want to sleep with that? Why do you want to go back with him?
Plus, why would you want to go see a dude if his name was Dr. Goodhead, but you're okay when it's a girl?
Yeah. Plus he's exfoliating. He doesn't look that great. He didn't look that young and virile anymore. Gross.
He was shiny.
Yeah, it was a little shiny. Very shiny. Very orange, yeah. I thought. Let's see. You're fired.
You called for me, Mr. Drax?
You were with Bond last night in my study.
No, I...
You showed him the safe.
I didn't.
I'm terminating your employment. You will leave immediately.
Immediately. Immediately. In fact, let's just keep that out.
You will leave immediately.
You will leave immediately. And by the way, James Bond is 100 yards away getting into a cab. Why don't you go with him? Like
whistling and laughing and having a good time.
No, run right by that golf cart into the forest.
Yeah.
So
you
weird.
Must leave immediately. All right, moving on. Close Encounters. That's annoying.
And yeah. I tried to, and whenever I saw it, I was like, wait a minute, which one came first?
That,
and I was like, I realized it once I looked it up. I was like, which one came first?
Well, that's a good Close Encounters is like 75.
When I looked it up, it was 75. So it was.
Sure,
it was
would love to see that again. I haven't seen that.
This was 79. And Spielberg, I'm reading from the trivia thing, and I want to make sure I paraphrase this, but basically, in not retaliation, but in agreement, basically Spielberg put James Bond music into the Goonies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
With Short Round.
With Short Round, exactly right. When he's
awesome.
Doing his little magic chest of goodies, the thing that shoots out all the.
I love that.
The
That's
ropes
great.
And
Way
grappling
to go,
hooks and stuff like that. And they were actually even going to talk about doing a James or a Steven Spielberg broccoli James Bond film, but then George Lucas said, "Hey, you want to go do Raiders Lost Ark?" And Spielberg lost interest in doing a James Bond movie. And
it's gonna be big rolling stone, and
can't have guns.
It's gonna be great.
Which is a good instinct when there's already a dozen films out. You should do something new. Mm-hmm. I just wish it was an instinct they obeyed before making a fourth Indiana Jones movie.
What would a Spielberg Indiana Jones or a Spielberg James Bond movie be like, though? I mean, would it be?
Back then or now, I'd say now I would not be interested. I think his tastes are too different.
But even back then, would it
be very adventurous?
Sanitized and
be just too adventurous and too.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I could see like the last Roger Moore films, like Octopussy or A View to a Kill, being Spielbergized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something candy like about those movies. By candy, I mean I don't know.
An actual Spielberg, like if you just gave it to Spielberg today, it would barely involve James Bond. There would be a whole troop of children who would be solving a mystery.
Right. A bunch of British kids that work at MI6.
The mystery would have something to do with an alien society. There's this alien society that's been living under the melting glacial ice caps at the North Pole, and the James Bond is called to investigate something, and these kids figure it all out.
There's the quiet computer one, and there's the fat, annoying one, and there's the girl, and she's kind of the leader. Yeah, I know how it
goes. Calculating.
There's this guy again. Just a reminder, he exists.
Hockey ninja.
His name is Jaws.
His name's Jaws. He kills people.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You just wrote his wiki. Congratulations.
Check out the sound work in this film. The sound work in this film is pretty amazing. Here you go. Yeah,
you make that sound with a vinyl record going, you know.
It is that, isn't it? Back and forth.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. All right. Great.
Pretty good. It was a pretty good sound effect for that.
I love movies in the 70s that featured musicless fighting. We've talked about this before. This weird thing that you used to do back in the day. You see it sometimes now, like the Bourne Identity movies do it to some degree. But this, instead of having all this scored fighting, it would go dead quiet. It would just be the fighting, and the 70s had it best. So here's 13 seconds of that. I love it, dude.
Yeah.
More of that,
fantastic.
Please.
Fantastic.
More of that.
By the way, can we really quickly talk for 1 second about what an ineffectual henchman. I know that wasn't right. Jaws. Was that Jaws?
Chang. No, that was Bond. That was Bond and Chang. Right? Yes.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think so. I'm not sure.
I remember too, because I remember thinking the same thing going.
That buzz in the background though makes me think it's in space and I don't remember who fought who up there.
Right.
So I couldn't remember.
Jaws bites through an entire cable. Yeah. What was that cable doing?
Was
that controlling anything?
No.
It was holding up the entire gondola. Not really.
The whole mountain it was holding there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Was that still in Brazil? That wasn't Brazil still.
Yes.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
okay.
They were in Rio.
Sugarloaf
Mountain.
All I could think of is how much BO everyone had. That's all I can think about. They all had BO. You knew they did. Here we go. Jaws speaks.
Well, here's to us.
Oh, dude.
Wow.
Here's to us. Here's to our long time in space.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. Hey,
you know, Chang impaled himself on a piano. Jaws gets to fly away with permabrain.
I'm going
to
be a great husband. My only problem is I can't have ice cream because it totally hurts my mouth when I eat ice cream. It's too cold. I can't have hot or cold. My dentist says that's a problem.
Of course, nothing hurts him. And it's so weird how this movie is repeatedly Jaws falling to his death and surviving just fine. And nothing, you know, nothing ever hurts the guy. Like, why does it take James Bond so long to figure that out?
Yeah, it's a good
question. Like, this guy survived falling from an airplane. You're going to kick him in the nuts and you think that's going to do anything?
I'm kind of out of options.
Wow, yeah, that's not working either.
That's good stuff. All right, they end with a joke.
My God, what's Bond doing?
I think he's attempting re-entry, sir.
Oh! Easy there, old man. Did he know you were working so blue? Did they just give you that line and make you read it?
And it's the accent. The accent. It sounded like he said rear entry, which I
didn't
know. I didn't know that. I've always wondered why James Bond doesn't have 500 children. Maybe it's because he prefers the rear entry.
Ryan, they call
500 sexually transmitted diseases now.
They were that was moon raking. That's what that was. All right.
Yes.
Moving on to Scott Fletcher, who says this.
Take me round the world one more time.
There you go. A little music from Scott Fletcher. Spoken word from Scott Fletcher. All right. It's time for this, everybody. Check it out. It's the checklist. Richard Cale taking out an entire circus tent. Check. 70s Bond. All hot young girls and old men. Check. Overtly sexual name for a Bond movie character. Check and check. And finally, snake fight. Check! I got some Star Trek connections, though. Those are always fun. Check these out. Walter Kotel was General Anatoly Gogol.
Walter Kotel.
He played Kurt Mandy or Mandel in the episode Home Soil on TNG. Also sounds like a rapper from that era. I'm Home Soil. Dan Whalen, the scoring mixer. He was also that for Star Trek 2, 3, 4, the 2009 remake, and was nominated as a score mixer at various times, Emmy and Academy Awards. Brian Keith was U.S. shuttle captain in DS9. He played Mullabok in the episode Progress, Uncle Bill in The Family Affair, and Judge Hardcastle in Hardcastle and McCormick, one of Daryl's favorite shows he wanted me to mention. So thank you, Daryl,
really?
For that. Yeah.
Huh.
I would give it a soundtrack grade. I'd give it a Q for quiet. I thought it was a little quiet. I'm not saying the thematic stuff was bad or any of that. You guys are right about all that. I still think some of that horn stuff blew, but... I just thought it was quiet. A lot of fights and stuff. Yeah, no music, right. You know, just not a lot going on. Oh, the horn blow. I just got what you were laughing.
Yeah.
I didn't mean that. So there you have it. All right. Let's get to our Twitter post. Sum this thing up in 140 characters or less, please. Let's start with Randy.
Moonraker, a James Bond film that has neither moons nor rakes. I call bullshit. True story.
Nicely done. Brian Dunaway.
Moonraker, like jumping from a plane with a parachute, then having it ripped away from you about halfway down. Up until then, it was a lot of fun. Now, a lot of arm waving and screaming.
Yeah.
Like, right. That was another, the whole arm waving like he's trying to fly.
Yep. Right.
Oh, come on.
That was great. I watched a recent Mythbusters, not a recent one, but an old archive one where they tested that and it does not work. And in fact, speeds up your fall. So don't try that. Do not try
why
that.
Not? You gotta try different things.
And they even had like those flying squirrel suits on. Like the really advanced ones. And that even flapping that made you go faster down than it did.
Stupid. Don't they look stupid?
They really do. Let's get to Brian Ibbett.
Moonraker, you've got a license to kill the franchise. Brought to you by 7-Up.
7-Up, I forgot about that. It's everywhere.
That was everywhere. Nicely done. All right, we have an alternate title. The film, this just in. Alternate title for Moonraker. Monty Python presents Moonraker. There you go. All right. Got an email from a listener in lovely Cleveland named Rich who says, Sack Pack is how he's referring to us.
Oh, I like it.
Well, I'm wearing one now. One film I'd love to see sacked is Remo Williams' The Adventure Begins, featuring Captain Janeway and Wilford Brimley, directed by Guy Hamilton. He did 4 Bond films previous to this. It's a great example of 80s or mid-80s action and one of my favorite martial arts training sequences. This was a classic, hey, the cover looks cool, unquote, rental my dad brought home. It quickly became a favorite because it has a lot of campy fun, despite trying for the most part to be desperately serious. If it is ever streaming, you guys should check it out. Rich from Cleveland. So,
absolutely.
Remo, never seen it. So that's
never seen it?
Nope.
Seen it plenty of times.
Oh, my gosh. Perfect. Perfect. Now,
people are always surprised that I haven't seen Remo Williams. It's not the first time this conversation has come up.
Right. I've also never
don't they have like a Utah thing in there too, where they do race across the salt flats?
You got me. I haven't seen it. So me and Randy will be virgins.
Oh my god! Yeah. It almost is worthy of a live commentary.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Is that that kind of movie? We haven't done one in a while. We need to.
There's
do one.
There's a lot of junk coming at you really fast.
I have I have DVDs, various DVDs and Blu-rays shipping to all three of you from people. Oh. So we got that coming up. Some of those coming as well.
Cool.
But next week it's Tomb Raider. And we've been putting that off for a while, but finally it's here. We're going to do it. And we'll get our Angelina Jolie action adventure video game movie on.
Silver suit. Can't wait.
And you know, there's a James Bond in it.
No, what? Who? Who's in it?
Daniel Craig.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I had no idea. This is before his breakout role as James Bond. Okay. I wonder if anyone was like, who's the new James Bond? That guy from Tomb Raider?
Right. Are you kidding me?
I remember people thought he was ugly. Do you remember when the news came out and everyone started flipping out like, ooh, he's weird looking. How can he be Bond? He's not handsome at all. He's kind of too gross and scarred up and stuff. Why were they wrong? Like the rugged handsomeness of Daniel Craig is striking, even for a dude, you know? Oh, yeah, baby. Take that shirt so off. Gorgeous. I think his moles look good even. Come on.
Should have that one looked at.
We probably should. That one looks weird. It's growing. Tomb Raider. That's next week. Tomb Raider. Please be here and enjoy that with us because we are very much looking forward to that. In the meantime, please go to filmsack.com for all your FilmSack needs, all our archives, links to everything there. It's all there. Leave comments there. We like those. We interact with people. We actually reply to what you say there. So don't fret about worrying we're not going to see it because we do. You can also email us, filmsack@gmail.com, and on Twitter, follow us at FilmSack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Which would be me.
We'll see you next time.
We named the space shuttle Moonraker.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.